I can't dictate what a kid dreams, you know, or what they really want to accomplish. But with most of your players, coach, I want to be a big time college football player. Coach, I want to go to the NFL. Okay. I know what it looks like. I know what it takes. So this is the chart that we have to start working on every day. Not tomorrow either. We start working right now.
Welcome to Raw Mind Sports, where we dig into the minds of athletes and sports fanatics. I'm your host, Ryan Primetime Jones. If you have a love and passion for sports, then this is the show for you.
Welcome to Raw Mind Sports. This is your host, Ryan Primetime Jones. I'm here with the man, the legend. I'm pretty sure he's a humble guy, so he wouldn't say the same thing. This is Jeff Craddock of Talbot High School, Talbot High Vikings. This area is known for football, and it starts with him as a head coach. You have to have leaders in place to put people in position to win, and he does that from on the field and off the field as well. So, Coach Craddock, let's talk about the dominance that you have had at Talbot High and talk about the lifestyle you came from in Ohio. Let's talk about before you became a head coach, you was the defensive coordinator, and also what you learned a lot in Ohio.
All of us have humble roots, and I've always loved the game of football, always played it from a young age. And, football in Ohio, I grew up right around the Hall of Fame, and it was emphasized at an early age, you know, and I was average. I mean, it wasn't nothing special. I worked hard as a player to be the best player I could be, so had some good high school coaches that were obviously an influence in my life. I was able to go to Mount Union College, which is the Division III powerhouse. They've won multiple national titles and had some great coaching there. Unfortunately, my career got short. I tore up my shoulder twice, had to have season-ending surgery, and they told me I couldn't play football anymore. So I loved the game so much, it was a natural transition for me to go right into the coaching, you know. And the whole idea was I wanted to have an influence on young kids. Had no clue I was going to end up in Tarboro, North Carolina at that time. But was able to, you know, start coaching. The defensive line was my first beginnings at a small school called Marlington. And then me and my friend who, you know, coached you, Mike Schott, we decided we wanted to move. And we wanted to coach together. We wanted to do our own thing. And we wanted to get somewhere that was a little warmer. And I was 23 at the time. Wasn't married. Didn't have any roots, really. And decided to take a chance with life. You know, you do it one time. And so ended up in Tarboro, North Carolina. And I'm a small town guy, you know, always have been. Alliance is a small town. Rittman's a small town. Obviously, Tarboro's a small town. And it just started happening pretty quickly, you know. I mean, Mike was named the head coach in 1997. And so I was able to be his defensive coordinator, which was the plan. And we did that for 7 years and had some success. We played for the state title in 98, had a great team. Come up short, but some seeds were planted there. Always knew you could be good in Tarboro. You know, the school, you know, I'm just blessed to be able to be a part of it. You know, you look back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, the whole tradition, even when the schools were separate, but I think they all merged together. I can't remember what year, early 70s. But it's been just been a Tarboro, you know, football tradition. And so I'm just trying not to drop the ball. You know, I look back at some of the great coaches. You know, you hear Doug Alexander and you hear Jim Brett and, you know, Russell Weinstein. And you don't want to let people down, you know. And so that's how I'm sitting here right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. Sounds like you did a lot of homework on Tarboro before you came to Tarboro.
Well, you know, if you're going to make a move 10 hours away from home, you want to research a little bit. And really what I liked about it, I mean, the Lord had his hand in all of it. I didn't realize it at the time. Unfortunately, at that time, I really wasn't too concerned about living for the Lord, you know. But when you look back and you see how things were kind of put in line, it's amazing, you know. Even if you're not, you know, fully a confessed Christian, or which I wasn't at that time. I grew up, you know, with a Christian background, but I really hadn't done what I needed to be doing. But I just had a feeling when I just remember driving in here, I'd never forget it. And I'm like, man, I just like this town. And then, you know, I remember seeing that they had played for a state championship, and I saw their tradition of winning conference championships. And right away, you're like, okay, there's a tradition here. I always believe if you can win in the past, there ain't no reason why you can't continue to win in the future.
I agree.
And so, yeah, I just liked it. I had no idea I'd ever be the head football coach. That was not at all in my plan. I can promise you that. But it happened the way it happened. And, you know, like I said, I'm just thrilled to be. Hopefully people will remember me as a positive influence, you know, on this community and on these kids. And, you know, they'll look back at my time and it'll be more positive than negative.
Let's talk about, also, you was talking right there in your conversation about your shoulder injury. Did you take some time off from football once you figured that you couldn't play? And how did it make you change from a player to a coach, even though I'm pretty sure that made you have a quick reaction? But
right. Well, I'll be honest with you, I was an irritated young man because I loved the game of football. And that's all I wanted to do was just play football. Like I said, I did it since I was 7. And I think I was an average player who was got better just because I outworked people. And so I just worked so hard, weight room, training, running. And so when I got hurt, you know, and they told me, you know, number one, you're out for the season. And then number two, if you blow out that shoulder again, you could lose use of your left arm.
Sheesh.
So as much as I love the game, I love having my left arm intact, you know, but I didn't understand of like why something I loved so much was taken away from me at, you know, in the prime. I think I was 19, probably going on 20. And so I was a little bitter and I didn't take it really well, you know. But, you know, it forced me to go more into the coaching aspect. And once I got over my bitterness, I was able to funnel some of that angry energy into more positive energy. And I think it's helped make me a better coach. I mean, because I wasn't a great player, so I had to pay attention to detail. I had to understand the importance of hard work. I had to understand the importance of film study. And those are a lot of the traits now, I think, you know, now that I'm obviously a lot older than 20, that I can pass down to these kids that I can still relate, you know, because unfortunately I have to deal with some of my players now. I know what it feels like when you have a season-ending injury and something you've worked so hard for is taken from you. I understand their frustration. I can empathize with them, and I can sit down and say, hey, I understand because I've been there. You know, I know exactly what you're going through. Unfortunately, I had to deal with it this year with my man Quan Robertson.
Wow.
You know, fractured his tibia. He's not out for the whole season, but he's going to miss about 90 to 80% of it, and that's just hard. He was a starter. He worked his tail off. He was paying his dues. And, you know, second game, that happens to him. And he'll be able to come back near the playoffs, but that's missing a lot of football, you know. So I just try to, you know, with my Christian mind, just try to use it as a strength now. I had to go through it. I went through it. And I just try to use it as a positive for the players I coach now.
Let's talk about you being a defensive coordinator before you became the leader of the show in Tarboro. Let's talk about what did you learn from Coach Schott as a head coach while you was being a defensive coordinator to kind of help you become what you are?
I think you learn good and bad. I mean, every head coach doesn't handle every situation the same. And first of all, I was able just to focus on the defensive side of the ball, which helped tremendously. So I didn't have to worry about, like you always say, the show, what we doing on offense, what we doing on defense, what we doing on special teams, you know, what are you dealing with this kid getting suspended? What's this kid doing on the streets? What's this kid doing in the classroom? You know, when you're an assistant coach, you got your empire. Defense was my empire. And I was able just to focus, dial in, you know, apply some of the film study techniques. I love getting up first thing Saturday morning. I'm usually out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm usually breaking down film by 6:30. I just love it. Studying and what's the team telling me? What can I do to make sure I'm giving my team every advantage that I possibly can? And I learned that being a defensive coordinator. And then, you know, problems would come up and I got to see how Coach Schott would handle them. And I may behind closed doors be like, you know what, I would have probably handled it that way. That's a pretty good job. But then also sometimes I'd have been like, I think I might have been a little bit more tough on that young man in this situation. Yeah. But those were his calls to make. It was his program. I would give him what, okay, you know what, Coach, I really think you screwed this one. Because me and him are buddies.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, we're just talking, you know. I'm like, man, you screwed this one up, you know, in my opinion. But it's also easy to say that when you're not the man.
Right.
And, you know, it's not your name and it's not your program. So, right. I mean, I thought he was a very good coach. He ran the program for 7 years and, you know, he won a couple conference titles. Like I said, he played for a state title game. And not a whole lot of coaches can say that, you know. And, right. You know, got us trending back upward again. And so life's a learning experience. And so what you do, and I'm still doing it. I mean, I'll tell the kids straight up, guys, that was a bad decision I made, you know, handling situations. And if I could go back, I mean, you try to do the best you can to make the best decisions. Sometimes you do that and just don't work out right. And you're like, you know what? Maybe I should have went and done it. So that's what I learned. It was a great experience. Like I said, I didn't know it at the time, but obviously I think it was gearing me. The Lord, once again, was steering me in this direction that I was going to be a head coach, and everything he was putting in place for me was putting me in that direction.
Amazing, amazing. Raw Mind Sports, people, Raw Mind Sports. Let's talk about your teams. Every team is pretty much coach, or you can kind of summarize it up about, like, what was the difference in each team, and also what was the difference in each championship team that you coached? Because I'm pretty sure every team had some type of difference or something that may brought to your mind a aha moment with them.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, you're exactly right. Every team is different. And what makes it different? Now, our schemes aren't different.
Right.
You know, I mean, people, what are you going to run? Straight T, 4-4, cover 3. You know, how's your special teams? We're a wall return team. You know, you know, so even the coaches, you know, make fun of it. Coach, we don't need to see your film. We know you're going to run your straight T. You know you're going to run a 4-4, cover 3. Yeah. But it's really a little bit more goes into it than what people actually think. I mean, but the difference is the personalities. You know, when you get 45 teenage boys together, you're going to have different personalities, you know. And that's what makes it fun. I always tell the kids, listen, I don't want to change your personalities. I want to change your performance. If you ain't playing good enough, or if we ain't blocking good enough, tackling or whatever, that's what I'm here to change. Not here to change. I mean, I coach funny guys, you know. I coach serious guys, you know. I coach guys who, man, Kamani McDaniels, one of my starting quarterbacks this year. That dude's just happy to be here. He's smiling all the time, and it's a breath of fresh air. Some of them, you know, have a little bit more serious demeanor to them, you know. Love them all. Yeah, and so that's what it's all about. In today's age, the world preaches it's all about me.
Right.
Football preaches it's all about the team. That's hard to get these kids to accept. Especially when you're 15, 16, 17, social media, right. Everything out there, you know, record it, put it out there, do whatever you can. And so we preach, you know, and it's easy to preach it, but it's another thing to model it. My coaches do a great job. You know, it's not about me. It's not about Coach Harding, who I see out there. It ain't Coach Babb, Coach Reams, Coach Whitley. It ain't about any of them. It's about us. You know, I leave for 3 weeks over the summer, you know, see my family back in Ohio, take my family to a trip for a vacation. The show goes on. The kids don't miss a beat. You know, if one of our assistant coaches is sick or something happens and somebody else got to call the defense, don't miss a beat. So I think we model that to our players that nobody's bigger than the program. I mean, Todd Gurley was a great player. He wasn't bigger than the program. You know, Tyquan was a great player, not bigger than the program. I mean, I've got a lot of great kids. But, you know, we won a lot of playoff games with Todd Gurley was hurt with ankle injuries. Show went on, you know. And so – that's just what we preach, and that's just how we try to model. And so what makes it so fun? I mean, when you get tired as a coach of dealing with personalities, or if the game starts getting boring to you, or you got to go. I mean, because now you're cheating the kids that have a chance to be great.
That's what I was going to ask you, too, as well, since we were talking about it. You're talking about the teenagers you coach. How do you – I'm pretty sure you react to each personality quite different, I guess, to that better understanding. How do you be able to understand – that many players and their persona, or how they do things, and how you be able to get their attention?
Well, that's a good question, and it's harder than what people think, because what it takes is time. Which is one thing. I can give you money. That ain't no big deal. I'm going to make more money. I can give a kid $5, go get yourself a meal. That's fine and dandy. But what I can never get back is my time. If I invest my time in you, that means I got to get to know you. That means I should try to get to love you. And once you start spending time with these kids, showing them that you care about what they're going through, you know, and that takes time. That don't happen overnight. A lot of these kids are tough kids. They're prideful kids. They got walls, some of them, built up from years of whatever they've had to deal with at home, which I know nothing about when they come to me as freshmen. It's my job as a coach to find out what makes them tick. What are they interested in? What can we talk about other than football? I mean, obviously the football is the bond because we all love it, wouldn't do it. But then You know, what kind of music do you like? You know, what do you like to do in your off time? You know, what other sports are you involved in? I like going to basketball games and watch them compete on the court. I like going to wrestling and if they wrestle and watch them. I like going to baseball. I like first thing I did this morning. You know, I just went up there. They started getting up here around 9:30. I'm just walking up, shaking hands. You say, "Hey, boys, good to see you." You know, I can't be that coach all the time where I'm always chewing, demanding, you know. So I'm like that on the practice field. I'm like that on the game field. But you also, like I said, you got to love them. You got to get, and as soon as they know you care about them, then you got them, you know. And so I know right now that on a practice field, there's certain kids that I can chew their tail and they're not going to blink an eye. There's certain kids I know that if I do that, they're going to shut down because they may have gotten yelled at their whole life. So when they get yelled at, they're just like, "I don't even want to hear what you got to say." So you got to know. Go to that. You go up to that kid and say, "Hey, bud, what did we just do right there? You know, well, why aren't we where we're supposed to be?" And they can usually tell you if you've done a good job coaching. Now, if a kid looks at me and says, "Coach, I don't know," all right, then I haven't done a good enough job coaching them. So obviously there's something that I've missed. But when you're coaching a kid, and that 9 times out of 10, that if that kid can tell you why he made a mistake, okay, you've coached him up well. He's learned his mistake. He knows what he did wrong. You don't have to yell a whole lot. Pat him on the back, say, "Okay, next time you see that, do your job." "Yes, sir." So all that goes into trying to win some football games.
Speaking of that, you've been coaching a lot of kids, and I'm pretty sure you consider them your children as well as you coach them over the years. Let's talk about your creation, your son. How does it feel to be a head coach and to also coach your son?
Well, it's pretty cool. You know, Clay's been obviously a part of my life. He's 16 now. Started off as the ball boy, as my youngest son, Cole, has been doing now for quite a few years. But he's grew up in football. I mean, it's been part of our fabric as a family. You know, Ohio State Saturdays, unfortunately, Cleveland Brown Sundays. You know, Tarboro football Fridays. Thank God that usually goes well. So, yeah, he's a good boy, so I'm really more proud of him as a young man. Usually 98% of the people that have taught Clay or coached Clay have told me what a great young man he is, how coachable he is. He's got a lot of my traits and the fact that, unfortunately, he has my genes. So that means he's not going to be a great athlete. I'm not trying to be funny and being truthful. When I played in high school, I wasn't playing against the caliber of athlete that's down here in Tarboro. I was playing with a bunch of white people. There's the difference.
Roll my sports.
I'm just being truthful. Down here, these boys can fly. You know what I mean? They can jump, and they're great kids. And so he has to be a better athlete than what I was. And so, once again, though, I think it's good for him because he does a great job of studying film. He's smart on the field. So he's got my coach's brain where he can make adjustments. And, you know, I feel bad for Quan because he's my starting inside backer, and Clay started up as their backups. When Quan got hurt, it was an opportunity for Clay to step in. And matter of fact, his first start was against North Edgecombe last Friday was his first start. But it's really pretty easy. I treat him just like any other player on the field. I always tell all my players, I just see numbers. I just know if somebody isn't where you're supposed to be. I don't know who that somebody is, but I just basically, you know, where's my outside linebacker? Like, I'm not screaming, where's McQuez Edge, or where's Clay, or where's Rock? Where's my right inside linebacker? You know, why? Where was he, you know, to my guy up top? So I coach him like anybody else. I correct him like anybody else. I'll pat him on the back like anybody else. And then, of course, when we go home, if you want to watch more film, we will. But, you know, we go home, it's just dad and son, and we just kind of goof around a little bit like we were celebrating the Cleveland Browns victory, you know, as a family. The girls, they went to bed. Even my wife went to bed. Me, Clay, and Cole, we were in there, baby, to the end. So, you know, we have a good time. We enjoy it. You know, he's a good boy. You know, he really doesn't give me many problems at all. I mean, he's a teenager. He's going to do some stupid things. Hopefully he'll be smarter than his daddy was. But very proud of Clay, you know, and proud of all my family. But Clay's a good boy.
Let's talk about one of your players that you sent to the NFL. Let's talk about Todd Gurley real quick. Let's talk about the year after he left. Did you have to say, as a coach over the years, you coach a lot of players, but did you say something was going to be different with him not being on the field? Or did you say, "Hey, I got to change this scenario"?
You know what? It's really funny because people always think, you know, there's the perception out there that, you know, we weren't really all that good until – Todd came through the program.
Right.
I thought we were starting to get pretty good even when Todd was in middle school. You know, his freshman year, you know, he played JV football, and we played for the state title, and we got beat. And then his sophomore year, he actually played JV football again. People like, are you crazy? How do you have like an all-pro NFL running back? And, you know, you don't even pull him up as a sophomore. And I say, I never claimed to be very smart. I don't know. But we were actually had a really good varsity football team. I think we went 15-1 that year. You know, Demaryius Harper was a great running back. I mean, we had a host of them back there. And, you know, we pulled Todd up for the playoffs, obviously. He was on the kickoff team, number 45, I remember. And but we won a state championship. Now, obviously, Todd's junior and senior year, he exploded on this, which I knew he was going to. And he was vital in both of those state title games. And we were able to continue. But then even the year after he graduated, you know, we had a really strong – really, the team coming back, I thought, had a chance to be better than – Todd's senior year team. I just thought they were better. We didn't have another Todd. Well, we did in Taekwon, I guess, on the defensive side of the ball, but we didn't have like that explosive runner. And we were actually undefeated, and we lost a heartbreaking state championship game in 2012. And, you know, so really, like I said, as long as you don't focus on individuals, you know, because the guys behind these players, they want to make their own name, you know, and that's right. What I always tell the senior class. I told this class, I said, you guys aren't state champions from last year. Last year's seniors, they're the state champions from last year. Like, you know, what do you want to do? You know, what do you want to be remembered, you know, when you leave? It's always about a chapter in a book. I was like, guys, we're writing a book here. You don't know it, but it's being written each and every year is a chapter of the Tarboro football book,
yeah.
You know, that we're writing. That's going to be documented. So you seniors are going to be remembered what you do your senior year. Not the coattails you might have rode as juniors.
Right.
Some of them juniors obviously played, and they were instrumental in winning the state title last year, but that's not what they're going to be remembered for. So I think if you keep that in place, you know, even when we weren't winning state titles, we had a little dip because senior class exploded one year, and I think only had like six seniors, and we only had 20-some football players. And even that year, we still won our conference. We lost in the third round of the playoffs. Year after that, we won our conference, lost in the third round. Year after that, we won our conference, lost a heartbreaker in round four, which is the first time we had lost in the Eastern Finals. I think we had a perfect record. And then last year, we finally broke through undefeated and was another state champion. So even when our program takes a little bit of a dip anymore, it's not much of a dip. It's usually undefeated conference champions, and you may lose in the third round at worst, which a lot of programs would take that at best every year. But that's not our expectation here. Our expectation is to win a state title every year.
Let's talk about, since you said the underclassmen, how guys, you didn't have some of the seniors. You say you had six seniors one year. Let's talk about, I know you have to have some guts or really believe in these guys, like starting a lot of sophomores. The past 5-6 years, I want to say you started a lot of sophomores and juniors, underclassmen.
Three years ago, I started 13 sophomores.
Jeez. So what did that do? What did you see in those guys these last 5-6 years?
Well, that's why the last year state championship, they're all special. Don't get me wrong. You savor one of them because they're really hard to get. A lot of people, you know, they all you make it look easy. Well, I can promise you it's not easy. It's a year-round process. You work hard. Like I said, you know, I left, you know, film study. You know, we just get home last night from a game and we're right up here first thing on a Saturday morning getting ready for the next game. And you do that basically for about 5 or 6 straight months. So you're not sleeping a whole lot. You're up here all the time. You're always studying film. You're always doing things. But that's the job. So no complaint there. But I almost forget what question you asked now. So with those kids coming up, you know, they were very talented as freshmen. You can kind of see it at middle school. Like, you know what, that group right there has a chance to be really special. And then they were undefeated as JVs, and most of them started as freshmen. And plus, we needed talent, to be honest with you. I mean, a lot of the guys ahead of them, some of them moved. Some of them got kicked off the team. And it was a crazy offseason that I had to deal with. And a lot of people think, they're like, oh, well, you win, you don't deal with issues. You're always dealing with issues.
Right.
As long as you're dealing with teenagers, I don't care if you're 15-0 or 0-15, you're dealing with issues. And, you know, I said, listen, boys, I don't really care what you want. You're all getting pulled up. And we're going to strap it on. We're not going to make an excuse. You never lower expectations. I think as soon as you lower expectations, you give kids an excuse. Well, I'm not going to give them an excuse. You know, I mean, right. Boys, we're here to win state titles, and we gotta get better in a hurry.
Like that.
Yeah, like now. And so we made the commitment, and the boys worked as hard as they could. So as sophomores, like I said, they won the conference, and then they lost a heartbreaking game to James Keenan, who went on to win the state title. We lost to them by 7. So we were, even that group of sophomores, very close to being state champions. But there's always a fine line, though. I mean, you know, and we didn't get it done. And then they came back as juniors, and that's when we went to the fourth round. We were winning at halftime to a great Wallace team who went on to win their third straight state championship. And we felt like we kind of could have won them when they were juniors. We felt like we left one on the table, and that's not a good feeling, trust me. And then that group came back now as seniors. So here they had been through the wars. They'd come up short. And that's why I was just so awesome, because those boys put everything they had into bringing that trophy back to Tarboro. And Mount Airy was a really, really good team. But we were just better. And I was happy for those kids. I mean, to see them finally achieve their goals, you know, so proud of them.
The dynasty here, it continues. Let's talk about, tell me in a capsule of 10 years on the success of Tarboro High football.
The last 10 years, I think it's been 9 conference championships. We actually lost, this is how good of a coach I am, we actually lost the conference championship Todd Gurley senior year. I'll explain that. But anyway, Kinston actually beat us that year in overtime. But if you put it in a capsule, it's been obviously 10 straight playoff appearances. We've advanced to the state championship game 6 times, and we've come away with 4 titles. So our worst season in there is when we went to the third round a few times.
Amazing. Let's talk about what your parents instilled into you from day one to where you're at now as a coach.
Discipline. Trust me, my dad did not mess around, and I was raised really by my stepmother, and God bless her, I love her so much, and you know, she's treated me just like I'm her own, and they were, I mean, you better be where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there, doing what you're supposed to be doing. No excuse. I mean, I'm telling you, I had a curfew when I was in high school at 11 o'clock, and if I was not home at 11 o'clock, I was not doing nothing that whole week, the next weekend. It could have been a second late. My dad did not play. And, you know, when you're young, you get – even when I went to college, so you think now you go to college, now I can come back home, I kind of do what I want. No, there was no doing what I wanted. My dad, he did bump it up to midnight. My boy, my other friend, staying out 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I wasn't doing anything wrong. I mean, I wasn't a heavy partier. I wasn't, you know, going out doing crazy things. I was just chilling with my boys. You're usually playing euchre or getting some pizza. You know, just chilling. My dad didn't. I'm not going to sleep until I know you are in the house. If you don't want to be in this house, then you can stay at school or you can do what you want. I mean, so I learned. I think that's what I kind of pass on. Well, of course, I think I parent like my dad. I passed that on. Not quite as strict as my father. I give my kids a little more breathing room. But it was good. I mean, they were great to me. I mean, you know, they supported me all the way up through. They always came, you know, to all my athletic events. They were just, you know, great parents. They come down, you know, the thing that they hate. Now, obviously, they're grandparents of my 4. My sister has 2, so they have 6 grandchildren now. They just wish I was closer. But they do listen to every Tarboro game on the radio. My dad loves it. They do come down usually twice a year. They've never missed a state championship game, so they love seeing Clay play now, you know. In one word, discipline.
Let's talk about, you know, you're pretty you're a successful coach, and you also had some good seasons and you had some bad seasons. Those bad seasons, what did they do to you mentally?
It keeps you seasoned. It keeps you humble. It's been a blessing. When you're going through it, it's god awful. You know, I mean, it was kind of funny. My first season, we weren't supposed to be very good. It was 2004, and we went 8-3, won the conference championship, lost in the first round of the playoffs. Because I was thinking about going back to Ohio. You know, I was going to do it 1 year, and I was going to fly the coop.
You were ready to jet.
I was ready to jet, but I was gone. And you know, there's a whole story with that. You know, my plan was I was going to do it 1 year, move back to Ohio with my boy Shot, who had left. And the Lord obviously had different plans. And so I was like, wow, we won the conference. You know, and everybody was all happy. We lost the first round. People were like, yeah, we haven't been to the playoffs for a while. And everybody was doing the old pat on the back. Man, coach, you're awesome. Great job. And I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Next year, we went 3-8. And it was so miserable. I mean, the kids, it was, if I'd have had that the first season, if that had been my first season as head coach, I would have been gone. Parents were calling me, stopping by the house. You know, we weren't a very good football team. I wasn't doing a very good job. I was learning. I was swimming. I think I was calling the offense. I was calling the defense. You know, I was my trainer. I was getting water. I didn't have a whole lot of help. It was bad. Bad. And then the next year, I pulled up a bunch of sophomores, and we got a little better. And I remember that group. I can remember Marcus Johnson. Marcus now is a nurse over in Greenville. Short, stocky, yeah. Marcus, built like a brick.
Yeah.
He was in eighth grade, and I ran into him at the food line, and I was absolutely – I probably just had dejection all over my whole being, you know, because – trust me, if we lose a Tarboro football game, ain't nobody taking it harder than me. Nobody. And he just come up to me and he said, Coach Craddock, you know, how you doing? I didn't know his name. And I just saw this short, you know, stocky kid. And I said, so I'm doing all right, bud. How you doing? He's like, my name's Marcus. I play, you know, I'm down at Martin Middle. And he said, I want you to know something. God, I think the Lord kind of works this way too. Yeah. He's like, I want you to know something, Coach. You just hang in there. The boys are coming. I'm telling you, the boys are coming. And I kind of walked away, and I'm like, you know what? That's pretty impressive for an eighth grader. He didn't say, I'm coming.
Yeah.
He just said, the boys are coming. And, you know, they started coming up. They started, you know, I didn't relax my discipline, so I was getting rid of players who might have helped me win a game or two, but in the long run, they wasn't going to be the foundation of what I was trying to build. And so I always believed if you're going to go into something – I mean, you got to go in all the way. You really do. You got to say, this is how we're going to do business. I believe the Lord was going to give me the people that I needed. I mean, if you look at my staff now, it's unbelievable. I haven't called an offensive, defensive play. I don't know how long. You know, I'm the special teams guy because I want our guys to know the importance of special teams. You know, I've got enough trainers now that I could probably staff every team in Edgecombe County. So the next year we got a little bit better. But we suffered a horrible loss. We lost, people forget this, which is good. We lost 51-0.
Oh boy.
To Green Central.
That was something easy to forget.
Yes, sir. And that's when the infamous letter to the editor got published, and this young man wanted me fired because, you know, I was a terrible coach and a terrible person and didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I mean, it was just this huge rant that got published. And it blew up, and it was really embarrassing, you know, because then you had people writing in trying to support me. Then you had other people trying to write in. And I was like, dear God, I wish it would just go away. You know, it was just really embarrassing. There were some rough times, but then they came back as juniors. And I think, you know, they went maybe 7-5. But we still hadn't won a playoff game. We were still one and done. So my first 4 years as a head coach, there was no playoff wins. There was one conference title. There was some very, very difficult times and difficult losses, but I just really believed it was the Lord. I mean, I was dialed in because I knew the Lord was up to something special because I was like, he ain't putting me through all this for this to be it. There's got to be a rainbow. I mean, if I'm going through the valley, I'm going to get on the mountaintop. I just got to keep digging, keep believing. And then when the boys – finally got to be juniors and seniors. That was 2008.
The boys.
When the boys arrived, and obviously it was state runner-up, state champ, state champ, state champ, state runner-up, third round, fourth round, state champs.
That was the beginning of the dynasty.
That 2008 was when it finally, all the hard work, all the prayers, all the prayers. were answered, and you know, my dad always will talk to me, and I call him every Sunday, and we just talk football and see how my family's doing. And he's like, you know, he goes, I just see how hard you work down there. And he's like, I just don't know how you do it. You know, all those hours every day, day after day. And I tell him, I was like, here's how I don't know who does it. Football coaches, and I'm not trying to be funny, who put in all the time, but yet they're going 2-9, or they're going 3-8, or they're going 4-7, and they're just in that rut. I said, those are the coaches I don't know how they really do it and stay in there, because, you know, you can be a really good coach and not be have a good or great football team. I mean, thank God here at Tarboro we have a blending of – I mean, I think we do a great job as a staff. My coaches put in so much time. They do a great job. And I also got great athletes, great kids who buy into the system. And it takes both. I mean, you can't have a great coaching staff with a bunch of really bad football players. You can make them average maybe. You can maybe take a team that's may go 1-10 and you can coach them up really good, and you may make that team 5-5, 4-6, maybe 6-5. But I tell you what you can do. You can have and I've faced teams like this, a bunch of teams that have great athletes, but they're not well coached. Right. And they go 5-5, 6-5 because those athletes are able to run around and make plays because they're good athletes. But it's when you have that unique blend, that special timing of, you know what? School produces some great athletes, and you know what? We got great coaches at the, you know, the little Viking program, the Little Vikes, which I'm going to be going to here in just a little bit. And then, you know, Coach Jones and Coach Miller before him down there at the Martin Middle School.
Yeah.
You know, these boys come up with a good solid background of fundamental football, knowing how to win, expecting to win. Then Coach Hurdle at the JV level. My God, I think his record's like 28-2 over the last 3 years. Does a great job. And then I get him. So all the thing I got to do is usually polish these boys up a little bit. You know what I mean? Keep getting bigger, faster, stronger. You know, of course, we coach at a little bit higher of a level, but it just takes everybody. It takes a community. It takes kids, community, coaches to be able to put together what we've been able to put together for almost 10 years now. I mean, it's easier to get on top. It's harder to stay on top. Because every now and then, some guy may have a great class run through, and boom, you know, it's like a team that's, boom, oh, man, they played for a state title, and then, boom, they disappear for the next 4 or 5 years. You never hear from them again.
Right.
I don't know if that's great coaching. I think that's more maybe of a great class coming together,
right,
and boom. But, you know, if trust me, it's hard to stay because, you know, every Friday night you're getting everybody's best shot.
Yeah.
I mean, they know when Tarboro's coming to town, they better buckle up and be ready to play, you know, and you've always got the red X on your back, which, trust me, I've been the hunted and I've been the hunter. I want to be the hunted. I'd rather be the one on top and let them try to hunt me than me try to chase people down.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. I knew it was amazing. I know you probably think of some games that if they were, like, close games, and you're like, man, they gave us a fight today, but we still won. But then they go back the next week, and you probably like the team that was coming at you, just like you said, that bullseye's on top of chest. And you probably say, man, this team got beat so bad this week. Why they didn't play like this the week before? And I guess that's the scenario of pretty much what you're saying.
That's right.
Let's talk about the three guys that right now we know for sure that went to the NFL. Tell me the difference in their mindset mentally, coaching those guys, Ty, Sean Drone, and Taquan. I know you was a great defensive coordinator for years, and still know the game on the defensive side as well, pretty much the whole game now. What gave you the thought that Taquan was that premier defensive player?
Really, there's more similarities. The one that surprised me more than any of them, see, I became Sean's head coach in his junior year, and I knew he had a special talent. I mean, I could just see it in his build. He had a unique shake and bake. But I wish I would have had him earlier. I wish I would have been head coach earlier. I think I could have done a better job of instilling a better work ethic in Sean. Because me and Sean butted heads early on because he didn't want to work. And I was like, no, you're going to work, you know. And so me and him are kind of, you know, clashing a little bit. Because it's my job to get the best out of every single player. That's my job. You know, if you're average, I'm going to try to make you good. If I know you're good, I'm going to try to make you great. If you're already great, I'm going to try to make you the best. If you're below average, if you're terrible, I'm trying to make you average, you know. So that's like how we look at our players. Okay, so but when you have these unique kids, you know, you're like, okay, they have to have that work ethic to if they want to separate themselves. Sean didn't completely buy in until really his senior year. Now he finally bought in, and so he started hitting that weight, and you can see him starting to fill out. My God, the kid could tote to rock and do crazy things on the football field. And so, you know, he absolutely, I think he went to that North Carolina camp and just basically shined. And before he left, they ended up earning himself a scholarship. And I knew that kid was going to be good. I didn't really know how good. So I'm just thankful that he figured it out about his work ethic. And I think more of that came once he really went to college. Like I said, I was with him and got instilled a little bit, but I think really he ended up taking it over when he went to Carolina and really, you know, started pushing. And then obviously going on, I think he had a 7-year career in the NFL. You know, he was that little traveling man, but you know what? He always found a niche. He always kept grinding away, and very proud of him. Now with the other two, obviously I had them their whole duration as the head coach, and I was seasoned a little bit more when it come time to coach those two guys. And the program was getting obviously a little bit more established then. And so, but both of them, I mean, you knew by their build, you know what, that kid right there, you know, is pretty good. And, you know, and then the first thing I do, and I got one this year with Massenburg, I said, you need to tell me how great you want to become. First thing I need to know, how great do you want to become? Because if a kid doesn't want to become great, I mean, I'm going to push him to be a great high school football player. That's my job. But if you don't want to go on and compete, you know, at Carolina or State, ECU, Duke, Clemson, you know, Virginia, Wake Forest, all these schools around us, these Division I schools, you know, if you don't want to do that, okay, that's on you. I mean, I can't dictate what a kid dreams, you know, are or what they really want to accomplish. But with most of your players, coach, I want to be a big-time college football player. Coach, I want to go to the NFL. Okay, I know what it looks like. I know what it takes. So this is the chart that we have to start working on every day. Not, you know, not tomorrow either. We start working right now. And that's classroom, that's character, and that's your work ethic. Now, if you can master those three, I always tell them, you got to separate yourselves from, you're not just competing against people in Edgecombe County. You're competing against everybody in the state of North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, you know, Kentucky, to any neighbor. Sometimes, you know, yeah, I mean, if you want to go nationally, now you're talking, I mean, big-time programs.
Yeah.
Ohio State.
Yeah.
Alabama, Clemson, Texas, USC, Notre Dame. And so I say, so what are you going to do when a college coach comes in that you can say, you know what, this kid's different? Says so starts number one in the classroom. And then, you know, then you got to outwork people. And Taekwon was on it. I mean, Todd was on it. Tecobi Cofield, he was on the practice squad, you know, with Washington. Now he's playing Canadian football. But they just had that attitude that, you know what, I want to be great. And so they wanted to be great on Friday nights. They wanted to be great in the classroom. And, you know, Tecobi got a full ride to Duke. Taekwon got the full ride to Ohio State, now in the NFL. And Todd got a full ride to school of his choice. He chose Georgia, obviously, a star in the NFL. And that's what makes him great. You got to want it. You know, as bad, you know, I'm talking with Massenburg right now. You know, he told me he wants to go his school. I said, what schools, if you had it, where would you want to go? He said, Clemson or North Carolina. I said, well, Clemson recruits nationally. Yeah. Clemson's recruiting Florida, California, they're Texas. They're recruiting everybody. They are one of the class programs. Dabo Swinney has done a tremendous job.
Yes, he is.
Carolina, their recruiting base is a little bit smaller. They're not quite nationally to as much as Clemson is. I said, but, you know, either one of those programs, you still have to separate yourself. And then when I checked their grades and we're having this conversation,
oh boy.
I'm like, I can either tell you, I'm not going to tell you what our conversation was, but I can say, you know what? You are showing me that that's exactly what you, that's where you do want to go. Or, no, you don't really want to go there because it's not worth it that much to do what you're supposed to in the classroom. Because results don't lie. You may be doing a great job on the football field. You may be doing a great job in the weight room. No, you really don't want to go to Clemson. Yeah, you don't want to go to Carolina because you're not willing to put in the work in the classroom. Some of them do. Some of them don't. I'm just an encourager and try to stay on them. But at the end of the day, kid has to make the decision.
You're right. Now I'm going to go to a random topic here on Roll Mind Sports. I'm going to pick Coach Crowder's brain off the field. Well, a little bit off the field of Tar Baha. Let's talk about your favorite music. What's your favorite music?
Oh, I'm an 80s guy, man. I'm heavy metal all the way. I used to have the long hair, you know, I'd go to my concerts. I could talk music better than football. Give me my AC/DC. I got my brothers listening to AC/DC in the weight room all the time. Trust me, Sean comes back, he knows AC/DC, baby. Guns N' Roses, you know, I love it. You know, I just grew up. And it's funny, you know, that it was the hair bands of the day. You know, Poison, Tesla, Metallica started coming in a little bit later. LA Guns, you know, just those long-haired bands, you know. And when I was coming through high school, everybody associated that. Like, if you listen to – that's why I never stereotype people.
Right.
You listen to that music, oh, man, you were a drunk. You know, you were going out and just raising Cain. You know, you were just a wild man.
Yeah.
I was the opposite. I was loving sports. I was a straight-A student. I always lifted. I always studied my film. I never went out. Like I said, I was a pizza card playing guy. I was in at 11 o'clock every night. How much partying can you do, you know? But I loved it. I would just sit there. I'd listen to it today. I mean, these bands are still pumping, and me and my wife, that's my release. If I can go to a concert Saturday night or whatever, I'm gone, baby. I can get out. You know, I mean, we'll get a hotel room, you know, go to North Myrtle Beach or go up to Raleigh or whatever. But to me, it's just, you know, it just gets you away for a little bit, you know, because you're always involved in football and trying to, you know, be the proper role model. And you're always tutoring, counseling, studying. And, boy, to get away for a couple hours, just jam to some music, it's beautiful.
So I knew you were saying something about pizza. Is pizza your favorite food?
I tell you what, bud, pizza and chicken wings. You
know, okay.
I don't know. You know, they're 1 and 1A. You know, tough to beat BW3s. You know, anywhere I go, I mean, like we go on vacations, there's not a wing spot in North Myrtle Beach that I don't know. You know, chains, little chains, big chains. As soon as we're going somewhere, first thing I do, local sports bars. All right, chicken wings. Who's got them? Who's saying they're the best? I'm going to find them.
I guess with some of your players, if they would found out that weakness, they probably, if you were mad at them, they probably say, hey, Coach Crowder, I got some wings for you.
Well, it's kind of funny because I bring all the seniors over, and I used to make them so I could prove to them that white people can cook some chicken wings too. You know, so we always do a senior cookout at my house and invite all the seniors over. You know, we do some swimming, we do some basketball playing, and we just get together for 3 or 4 hours before the season starts. Just to hang out and be guys, you know, not coaching, just, you know, hanging out. And I'd always cook, you know, a lot of chicken wings and cook them up for the boys. And then I started, you know, doing B-dub wings for them. But it's they know I do enjoy some good chicken wings, you know what I mean?
Let's talk about your favorite teams, your favorite college team. But I know you love Ohio State. And tell the viewers about how much you love Ohio State. And I'm pretty sure you was kind of ecstatic when Taquan chose the Ohio State.
Right. People think I railroaded my guy into going to Ohio State. I really didn't. I know it's fine. I know you find it hard to believe. But the funny thing was the coach from Carolina, his name always escapes me. He was a defensive line coach. So he started recruiting Everett. He started recruiting Taquan when he was at North Carolina. Well, then he joined Urban Meyer's staff at Ohio State. So he had already Taquan on the radar. So I've been to a couple games when I was in Ohio. Obviously, I grew up a Buckeye fan. I mean, that's just the team. And it's easy to be a Buckeye fan because they're usually pretty good. They have a great tradition and all these things. But then, you know, when you come down here, now you're in Carolina country and there's hardly any Buckeye fans.
Right.
So you really got to support. You know what I mean? You really got to show, hey, we got some good football in Ohio too. You know what I mean? But so he called me and he said, Coach, is there any way that you can get Taquan Lewis to come up here for a Friday night? They do a Friday night lights up there at Ohio State where they bring the best high school prospects to their campus and they compete over a weekend and you get to compete in front of all the Ohio State coaches. And I was like, well, I get to like be on campus. He's like, Coach, you'll be on the practice facility. You'll be in the weight room. You'll tour everything. You can meet Coach Meyer. You're going to be right there. I said, yeah, the baby. I said, Taquan. I said, listen, I don't care if you go to Ohio State. This weekend, you're going to Ohio State. And I talked to his mom. And me and Clay and Cole and Justin Smith, who was a coach here. He's a big Buckeye fan. He moved back to Ohio. I threw him in the back. Moved to Columbus, Ohio, we went. And we had a ball. I mean, of course, I had a ball.
Yeah.
And but Taquan was amazing. And before he left, they offered him a scholarship there on the spot. And I told him, I said, but I on the way home, I said, you have fulfilled what I wanted you to do. Now, if you want to go to that college and play, that's on you. But I said, it makes no difference to me. But Urban Meyer, I mean, he was good. I got to sit in his office and listen to the spiel, the recruiting spiel, and I was really impressed. That's the first time I got to meet him and sit back and talk to him for a little bit. And, yeah, Tyquan just felt like, obviously, it worked out well for him. I mean, he was the Big Ten player of the year his junior year and had a great season and got drafted in the second round. And he, you know, got some great coaching there. And so, yeah, very proud of him. Sure is. He really, really wanted to go to Clemson. A lot of people forget that. That was really his number one school. And then Clemson got me hot and bothered because I didn't know how this big-time recruiting stuff worked. And I thought once they offered you a scholarship, that scholarship was there until you decided to say no. It doesn't work like that.
Oh, wow.
If they want two defensive ends, they may offer to their top five. Now, if they get two that commits, they'll take those two, and those other three, they'll call and say, listen, your offer's no longer on the table. Mm. So I was at North Myrtle Beach on vacation, and the coach called me and said, you know, we're pulling Tyquan's offer. And I was like, he hasn't made his decision yet. Why are you pulling his offer? Well, we've already, you know, we've signed our defensive end commit, so we feel like we're good now and we're moving on. And I was like,
oh boy.
I said, so that's how we do business. You know, I was hot now, I'm telling you. And he knew it. So anyway, I was naive, to be honest with you. I just thought that, you know, if you want a kid, you offer him a scholarship, and if he tells you no, then you move on. I didn't know that you would, you know, I didn't know that's how the system kind of worked. But that's how it worked at Clemson that year. And so anyway, he ended up going to Ohio State.
That's amazing. Let's talk about your Cleveland Browns.
Yes, sir. We are 1-1-1 at this time. Yes, sir.
I know it's amazing. I was like I was telling you earlier, and I was telling people myself, the definition of loyalty is to be a Cleveland Browns fan. Because you could go through the pain and stuff they have been through and still be a Cleveland Browns fan, then I'm pretty sure your wife is happy. You have a your wife probably said, I have a very loyal man.
And that she does. I'm loyal to my teams to a fault. You know, I mean, you know, even the Browns have been in, you know, it's almost what do I have to say, parent cruelty or whatever, you know, abuse to my children. Because even my son, Cole, asked me one time, he's like, Dad, did you have to raise me to be a Cleveland Browns fan? I said, absolutely. Nobody's jumping on that bandwagon, son. It's a curse. It goes generation to generation. But they actually used to be really good, in the 50s and 60s. In the 70s, they weren't bad. Late 80s, with Bernie Kosar, they played in three AFC championship games and couldn't get past John Elway and the Broncos. And you know, they were a competitive team, and then the team moved to Baltimore. You know, people forget this, but the Baltimore Ravens are really the old Cleveland Browns.
Right.
So not only did our football team leave, but then the Ravens won a Super Bowl like 3 years after they left Cleveland with Cleveland Browns football players.
Yeah.
With our owner. Yeah, I'm bitter. I'm bitter about that. So then they give us a franchise back in 99, and it has been nothing but absolutely ridiculous. Like, we've had one winning season, one playoff appearance, about 3,000 starting quarterbacks. It's been terrible. So we have our first win. We have Baker Mayfield, who looks like he could be a really good NFL quarterback. Denzel Ward from Ohio State, our number one draft pick from last year, also looks like a great corner. I think we really have some really good defensive players. Defense looks legit. Now if we put Baker Mayfield in there, so it's a good young team. I think we'll win 5, maybe 6 games this year. I think they're all going to be pretty close. But, sometimes getting that first monkey off your back is hard.
Right.
But hopefully that it's off and now they can actually play and not always have that weight of, you know, we haven't won a game in 600 days or whatever. It was Christmas Eve. What year is it? 2008. Christmas Eve of 2016 against the Chargers was the last game that they won.
Oh, wow.
Yes, that's a long time. And so I can promise you that the Craddock boys stayed up late and celebrated that victory on Thursday night.
In my conclusion to Raw Mind Sports with Coach Craddock, the definition of Coach Craddock is never judge a book by its cover. Just because he has a lot of sense, he also told you in this podcast, in this interview, in this episode, is that he also has some not so good successful situations. And time, I always preach that myself. Time is everything. Time. You can't get time back. And the things he's doing for this community and for the Tarver football program means time is a lot, because it takes time. It takes time developing them. It's like growing a seed, putting a seed in the ground and growing it into a tree. You know, the fruits that you have. And I'm pretty sure God put him in this situation for a reason, because it was, he said in the interview that he possibly could have left the first year. But God told him, no, this is where you need to be. And as you see, he's pretty much getting the great fruits of labor now because of the patience he had to be able to change this program around in his time. We also had other successful coaches, but every coach had a unique way. But I feel like Coach Crowdout's patience and his leadership and his gritness and toughness is the reason why Tarver is where it's at. Leadership matters. If you got a great leader, you can do anything. Anything is possible in life, as long as you know where you're trying to go and how you're supposed to go. On this show today, Coach Crowdout.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man.